We'll call the EMWD Board of Directors meeting to order, this being November 6th, after a little after 9 a.m. Phil, would you lead us in the pledge?
I'd be happy to if you could stand, face the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
April, do we have any guests this morning?
Yes, we have one guest, Jeff Endersby with Gannett Fleming.
Great morning.
Morning.
Okay, with that, this is a time and a place for public comments. You can address the board on anything that is within the jurisdiction of EMWD and not on today's agenda. And having no speaker cards and so on, no one raises their hands. Paul, let's go to executive reports, please.
Morning, President Sullivan, members of the board. My written report is in your board package. Yesterday at the Metropolitan Water District board meeting, MET took action to authorize co-sponsorship of legislation that is going to create a statewide program to evaluate, systematically develop appropriate regulatory actions for contaminants of emerging concern. As you know, as new things are discovered in the water system or our ability to detect things in the water system increases, CECs, you know, such as, of course, PFAS, which we're all acutely aware of, come forward, and there is not the health-based studies and science that is necessary to promulgate regulations. There's a lot of pressure from the public to do something about it. This can lead to legislation, and setting regulations by legislation is not a very obviously desirable process. And in looking at this issue, the state really does not have a separate group within the state or procedure or program to look at CECs as they become available, look at what the health effects data is on those CECs, see where the data gaps are, and then kind of sort those into which should be a real priority, which are not a priority necessarily based on work that's been done in other parts of the country, et cetera. So the MET legislation would set up this process in the state of California and really give a little bit more order and proper priority to CECs from a regulatory standpoint, kind of fill in data gaps, ensure good science is used to ultimately promulgate regulations, and that those are prioritized accordingly. So this was came to the MET board at its previous meeting. There were some questions from LA and a couple of the other MET member agencies. Those were responded to, and the MET board unanimously supported this. So MET will be co-sponsoring this legislation with the California Municipal Utilities Association. I think it's something that's really important for the industry. Under past and ongoing activities, great news on our groundwater replenishment and storage. Our year-to-date recharge is over 16,000 acre-feet. We are recharging at a very high rate. We are now approaching about 4,700, a little over 4,700 acre-feet of deliveries for calendar year 2021, the pre-deliveries of the Savoba water. MET continues to have water through the State Water Project, although the very beginning of the rainfall year is fairly dry. They're continuing to make water available. It looks like that will continue through the end of the year. If they continue into 2020 with deliveries of Savoba settlement water, we will then be looking at potentially taking 2022 water. It's a good problem to have. In addition, as reported to the board previously and authorized by the board, we entered into a cyclic storage credit program agreement with Metropolitan, initiated that program in August. That program allows us to store water in lieu by shutting down our wells and a portion of our wells in the Hemet-San Jacinto Basin. To date, we've accumulated 3,116 acre-feet of water under the cyclic credit program, which also benefits us not only from a water supply standpoint, but keeps us financially neutral. And so very good news on the recharge front. The pipeline for a repair, Jeff maybe can give a brief update on that, but they are completing the repair, removing the bulkheads. There's a small window between when the repair is completed and when the pipeline is going to be taken down again for a shutdown for some work at the Skinner plant. In that window, we approached Rancho California Water District to see if they wanted to commence their cyclic deliveries. For a variety of reasons, they are not going to be able to do that in that short period. And so if the cyclic program continues to be available after the shutdown at Skinner, we would expect that Rancho will start taking deliveries at that time. But they have not, and they are not going to take deliveries in that short window, to our knowledge. On our legislation, SB 414, and we have a meeting this Friday with the State Water Resources Control Board staff and council to go over the revised bill language. As the board knows, it's a two-year bill, which means it needs to be heard in January and out of its house of origin, which would be the Senate, by the end of January to continue in next legislative session. At the end of the calendar, or the end of the legislative year, last year in August, we made some substantial changes to the board or to the bill and worked with the author's office as well as state board to review that. We just could not get it over the goal line in the last first year of the legislative session. So we are meeting with the state board staff and council to go over those revisions in detail on this Friday. We're going to see if we can get consensus on that to move the bill forward early in the year. Additionally, while we're in Sacramento, we are going to take the opportunity to meet with the chair of the State Water Resources Control Board, Joaquin Escobar. We're going to give him discuss some of our ongoing activities in the district, discuss where we are with SB 414, also talk about water affordability and the state's efforts in that area, and implementation of the state's Safe and Affordable Drinking Water Fund. And so we'll use that opportunity while we're up there. Last, I'd like to just note that we have another business outreach luncheon coming up for our consultants, professional services provider. That is on November 13th. Invitations went out in October. We have well over 50 RSVPs. We just recently had a similar event that was more focused on vendors and suppliers. That was a very well-attended event. And for those board members who haven't attended the event, it's a really kind of compact schedule over the lunch hour where vendors, consultants, local suppliers can come in. We give them background on a topical item relative to the district. It gives them a chance to interact with all the senior management and also the line staff that work on various products that they provide or services that they provide. And I think the goal of that is we get those consultants and suppliers working together. They also have a relationship with our staff, and it really increases our competition when we go out to bid for things. And I think that's really the idea, is we want to make sure we're getting the best vendors, suppliers, consultants, and other service providers at the district, and we're getting the best price. So that's been a real successful event. That last event had over 110 attendees, and we had a waiting list. So it's being very well received by the business community. And with that, just to note, we will be closed next Monday in observance of Veterans Day. Are there any questions? Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Laura.
Nothing, sir.
Nick. I would like to just mention the work that we're doing with addressing the odor issues, the foul air odor issues at the Paris plant. You're very much aware that there's an issue there. We're moving forward with a project. We brought to the board a request for approval to move forward to acquire the synthetic media that we're going to replace the bark media that we have out there. So that's moving forward. We have bid opening scheduled for tomorrow for contract work to replace that media. So pending good bids, we'll be moving forward very rapidly to conclude that work. I bring that up as we're driving in this morning. I noticed that the odor was a little strong there this morning, so we're very anxious to move forward and address that, and we should have that in place fairly soon.
Terrific. Okay. Joe.
Good morning. Nothing today.
Jeff.
Just as a quick follow-up to Paul's comment regarding Sandy Pipeline 4. So as you mentioned, they are working right now to remove the bulkheads and then disinfect that segment of the pipeline. And that work is scheduled to be completed on the 10th. So that's moving ahead as planned at this point. And he also mentioned there is another shutdown coming. That will be December 8th. It could be up to 10 days, 7 to 10 days is what they're telling us. And that's to allow for the installation of a new flow meter at the scanner filtration plant. So that shutdown in particular is being scheduled by Metropolitan Water District. I don't anticipate any significant impact to our customers. We will be able to meet our demands with other sources, including mills and water from the valley. So it will be in good shape.
Okay. Okay. With that, I'll accept a motion and a second for approval for items 3A through 3F on the consent calendar.
I'll move the item.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously with Director Record absent. With that, we will go to the action calendar 4A, which is approve and authorize an amendment with Gannett Fleming Incorporated for $307,644 for final design of the Murrieta Road Transmission Pipeline Improvements Project and additional appropriation in the amount of $577,010.
Good morning, Mr. President, fellow members of the board. I'm happy to present to you our Murrieta Road Transmission Pipeline Project. The project's located in the city of Menifee. It spans from the DeSalter Complex to La Pieta Road. This will provide us the priority conveyance capacity we need to be able to distribute the new capacity from La Paris to DeSalter. The project consists of adding additional 6,800 linear foot, 36-inch diameter steel pipeline, and a 42-inch steel crossing at Salt Creek. We'll coordinate this project with the Paris to DeSalter and the Paris Valley South Transmission Pipeline Improvement Project. The Paris Valley South Transmission Pipeline Improvements Project consists of 1,000 feet of pipeline shown in red on the screen here. This particular project was designed and prepared. We were looking for the opportunity to work with Kiewit on this project to incorporate that with the Paris to DeSalter. However, it was at the end of the day found to be better to bid this as a standalone project. So we're moving ahead with incorporating this project with the 36-inch transmission pipeline along Murrieta. So we're looking to advance the final design with Gannett Fleming. They were previously competitively selected for the preliminary design, and that's been completed. The final design consists of preparation of plans and specs, other evaluations, investigations, and coordinations to complete the final design process. And this scope of work will take us through bidding. We're looking to advance the project upon award to get the project out to bid sometime in April of 2020 and move forward with construction soon thereafter. We look to complete the Murrieta Road alignment portion by April 2021. About the same time as Paris to DeSalter will come online. And then final completion, which would include the Paris Valley South piece, by February 2022. So with that, I'd like to recommend we advance a contract with Gannett Fleming in the amount of approximately $397,000. Also, other ancillary contracts to complete the final design and additional appropriation required to complete the project in the amount of approximately $577,000. So with that, are there any questions?
Do you have any questions of staff?
I'd move staff's recommendation.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously with Director Record absent. 4B is to approve and authorize the addition of funds to agreement number 107482 with Babcock Laboratories Incorporated for a revision of not to exceed total of $1,840,000 for the lab. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, President Sullivan and board members. I'm here to present the additional funding for laboratory service. Little background about this. On June 7, 2017, the district approved and authorized a five-year agreement with Babcock Laboratories Incorporated for an amount of $805,000. This was based on previous analysis of cost and cost that we anticipated for laboratory services. Babcock provides the laboratory analytical services, and these are tests that are not analyzed by your district lab. These are exotic tests such as organics, radiologicals. Also, Babcock provides a backup to district functions, such as when our laboratory instruments go down, they can do our service for us. Also, for any overloads to our laboratory. So far, our expenditures are about $584,000, which is 73% of the budget. And we still have 3 years remaining, and this is the reason why we're going to you, to board, for additional funding. So what was our current anticipated cost? One of them was a laboratory renovation. We went from a two-phase to a one-phase, which was a complete shutdown of the laboratory. By doing this, we actually decreased the amount of time required for the laboratory to be fully completed. And in addition, we saw that there was a cost saving by doing that. There was a slight additional construction time currently right now, too, for anticipated costs. Other new regulations, obviously, is the PFAS, which everyone has heard already, the PFOA and PFOS, which is coming out, as well as our Well 59 startup and operation, which is going to begin in 2021. Other regulatory items we have is the unregulated contaminant monitoring rule, which is the UCMR4 testing. These are exotic testing that our laboratory cannot do, which we need to rely upon for the contract laboratory. Other anticipated costs, engineering projects. There is a nutrient loading treatment assessment. This is a wastewater module where they actually have to take samples throughout the laboratory over a period of time. Through the wastewater treatment plant over a period of time. And this very intense testing over a short period of time. Additionally, there's multiple wells that are going to be started up, the groundwater replenishment plus, as well as the just recently awarded Paris North Basin grant that we have. We also have the Paris 2 RO facility treatment and monitoring reporting. We have the facility startup, and then we also have a 20-year groundwater monitoring program that we have to start to implement. One of the additional anticipated costs was Temeca Valley wastewater treatment expansion. It had to have a separate monitoring location for the effluent. They didn't have a good location, so now we're doing a lot of regulatory monitoring and process control monitoring in a separate location. That added cost to Temecula. So our summary of contracted costs, our previous cost was $805,000. Of that, the laboratory construction renovation was $270,000. Our testing requirement was $535,000. Our revised contract for the construction now is $481,000. The testing requirement is $741,000. Other project-related work is $450,000 with a contingency of $167,000. That brings the revised contract budget to $1,840,000. So our recommendation is to approve and authorize the addition of $1,035,000 to agreement number 107482 with Babcock Laboratories Incorporated, bringing the full term not to exceed $1,840,000.
And now these expenses would be through June 30th of 2022. Is
That's
that correct?
Correct?
So these are multi-year expenses.
Yes, this is an additional 3 more years.
Okay. Do you have any questions about?
No, we discussed this in option engineering. If there are no questions, I'll move the item.
Okay. I'll second it. Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously with Director Rickard absent. Agenda item 4C, which is approve and authorize an agreement with Krieger and Stewart for $166,000. For final design of the French Valley Recycled Water Pipeline Phase 2 and appropriation in the amount of $217,000.
Mr. President, I need to recuse myself on this item because my family does business with Krieger and Stewart.
Okay.
And the minutes should reflect that Director Crona has left the dais.
Thank you.
Okay. Good morning.
Morning.
Mr. President Sullivan and Board of Directors. I'm here today to talk about French Valley Recycled Water Pipeline Phase 2. The objective of this project is to potable water offset to replace landscaping that's using potable water with recycled water. So it expands on the existing recycled water system that we have, that we recently completed the Phase 1. Some of the larger retrofit sites are Emerald Park, Brookfield Park, Temecula Unified School, Elementary School, Susan LaBorgia, and then parks, Parkway and Medians that are maintained by Valleywide Recreation Park District. A location map here shows that phase one along Porter Road, we ended at Sheffield Park. This extends north all the way to Brookfield Park, and then has a branch that goes to the elementary school and the park over there. And then on Benton Avenue, phase one left off at Butterfield Park and then the French Valley Elementary School. This extends on Benton Road out to the east. And then it actually sets us up for future. So in this phase two, we're going to convert about 141 acre feet of potable water. But it sets us up so in the future, Temecula Unified School District is looking at building a new K through 8 school there on the north of Washington. And then to the south of that, there's a potential to build a future high school there. And then in between is the current charter school there. And then on the, that'd be the east side of Washington Street, it's kind of off the map, there are some future development opportunities there that they could help build the pipeline and frontage to bring recycled water up to those developments. Okay, so we selected Krieger and Stewart off our as-needed on-call list. Their scope includes the surveying, also includes a sub-consultant, Layton, to do the geotechnical work, prepare the design drawings and the contract, and we negotiated a fee of $166,000. The schedule takes about 9 months to do the design, a couple months to put it out to bid and award a construction contract, and we figure about a year to install the pipeline, so that puts us at completion of the project about 2 years from today. So staff's recommendation is to authorize the general manager or his designee of the district standard contract with Krieger and Stewart for final design of the French Valley Recycled Water Pipeline Phase 2 in the amount of $166,000. Administrative award of other standard agreements needed, and then to appropriate $217,000. That would cost fund the project through the bid award phase. And with that, I'll take any questions.
I just want to say I'm very excited that we're moving forward on the next step towards this. So if there are no questions, I'll make the motion to approve.
Yeah, I just have one question, or just a clarification. All the stuff that's going on up and down Washington north of Benton.
Yes.
Does that serve this area, or is that a separate system being put in by the developer?
That would be a separate system. So right now on Benton, we're going up to Moser and stopping there. That's where the street improvements end.
Right.
And then as the developers do street improvements, we would work with them to extend okay. the system up there.
Good.
The way I know it is you drive down there and there's just constant detours. So there's a lot of stuff going on
yeah,
out there.
There are.
Just had Director Pauly and I had a French Valley Town Hall community meeting. This was on the agenda. We included this, and they didn't throw rocks at us or anything. Very supportive of what we're doing out in the community with recycled water, particularly what we did in Sheffield Park in terms of partnering on the bathroom facilities as well as the recycled water conversion. So whenever you have a town hall meeting and you put a construction, future construction on the agenda, that always gets the community's attention, but they seem, at least, and Director Paul, you may want to comment on this, but they seem very supportive of what we're doing.
Our community is supportive of the fact that we're going to, the green belts are going to go to recycled water. We're adding a couple more parks and elementary schools. So, like I said, I'm very, very excited that this is moving forward. So,
super. We have a motion on the table. Can you get a second?
I'll second it.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously with Director Record absent and Director Corona abstaining. Okay. And for the record, Director Corona has returned to the dais. Agenda item 4D, approve and authorize the Hemisana Central Water Master proposed 2020 administrative assessments.
Good morning, President.
Good morning.
And members of the board. This morning, I will be reviewing the Hemet San Jacinto Water Master Administrative Assessment Rate. And I'm going to start by providing some background and the purpose for our discussion this morning. In addition to the estimated 2020 San Jacinto Water Master budget and the comparison with the available reserves and also the options for the administrative assessment. Back in August, the Hemet San Jacinto Water Master Advisor proposed an increase to the administrative assessment for 2020. In the upcoming November board meeting, the San Jacinto Water Master Advisor will be requesting action on the proposed administrative assessment. Our staff has reviewed the proposed administrative assessment rate increase, and this morning we're requesting some feedback on our recommendation prior to Director Pauly being asked to take action on this at the November board meeting. The stipulated judgment defines an acre-foot charge to be levied against each public agency water pumped against its adjusted production rate. And this administrative assessment covers expenses that include office space rental for the water master, preparing and collecting assessments, monitoring of well pumpings, measuring water levels, sampling and analyzing water quality, compiling and interpreting the collected data, as well as conducting special studies, supporting any litigation efforts, and other expenses that are deemed reasonable. The Hemet San Jacinto Water Master Rules and Regulations further define that the advisor shall recommend the administrative assessment as well as any replenishment rates that are necessary to support the 2020 budget and concurrent, or each year, the budget, and concurrently assessing or recommending that assessment in conjunction with the budget by the 30th of November of each year. So initially, the administrative assessment was set at $50 per acre foot. The Water Master Board had previously established a goal of maintaining approximately $1 million in the reserves. As that reserves approached $1.2 million, the Water Master Board approved a reduction of about 40% of that administrative rate down to $30 an acre foot, where the administrative assessment has remained ever since. At the time that that was approved, it was acknowledged that the budget for the annual budget and the administrative assessment, that there would be a gap, and that the reserves would need to be used for a period of time to close that gap. And so as you can see, over the past couple of years, that gap has gotten bigger between the administrative assessment that's collected and the budget. This graphic shows the adjusted base production rates compared to the actual productions that have been subject to the assessment. The blue line on the top shows the adjusted base production, and the black line at the bottom shows the actual productions that have been subject to the assessment. The dashed line shows what the Water Master Advisor used to estimate the available reserves and the assessments over the years. And as you can see here on this graph, 2019 has the lowest amount of production that has been subject to the assessment. And there's a couple of reasons for that. Number one, the city of Hemet has several wells that are offline. So the estimated 2019 adjusted base production rate was about 4,500, and in reality, they only pumped about 10% of that at about 425 acre feet. And also, as Paul mentioned as we started our board meeting this morning, Eastern has had the opportunity to take advantage of the Metropolitan Water District Cyclic Storage Program, so we have actually reduced our pumping substantially from what was estimated at the beginning of 2019 when looking at the budgets and the assessment rates that would be available. At the beginning of 2019, it was estimated that we would pump approximately 7,300, and in reality, we pumped under 1,800. So this has a direct impact on the amount of assessments that are collected. And so looking at Eastern, the fact that we pumped 1,800, less than 1,800, the amount of assessments that were collected from Eastern were about 53,000. That's more than 119,000 less than what was estimated by the Water Master Advisor at the beginning of 2019. So moving forward to 2020, the Water Master Advisor has estimated the productions. the calculation is usually based on the previous 3 months. That's how he has calculated it historically. So he carried the same production for the city of Hemet that has been has actually been seen over the past 3 months. But Eastern, he did adjust, recognizing that the 2020 cyclic storage program would likely not continue. So he assumed that the cyclic storage would stop at the end of 2019, and our base production would increase back to about 6,500. So he then looked at three different options for the assessment, looking at the existing $30 per acre foot, increasing by $10 to $40 an acre foot, and then an assessment based on $45 an acre foot. And for Eastern, if we look at the mid option here of increasing to the $40 an acre foot, this would increase our annual expenditures for the administrative assessment to about $65,000 over the $30 an acre foot assessment. But we also reached out to Hemet directly to determine whether or not the estimate for their production of the about 425 acre feet for 2020 was really adequate. And what they shared with us is that they're anticipating three of their wells to be back online by 2020. So we wanted to look at that as well to see what type of impact that would have on the assessment to determine whether or not the increase was applicable with Hemet coming back online. And what we determined is there's only about a $25,000 difference. And so in this chart, the last two lines show a comparison of the totals, assuming that the Hemet production includes the three wells that they plan on bringing back online versus the Watermaster production estimate. The 2020 budget was also considered when assessing the options for the administrative assessment. And the budget includes the in-lieu program agreement, the groundwater monitoring program, and dewatering of the Saboba gravel pit. It also includes the Water Master Advisor's budget and some preliminary work for the next round of groundwater modeling. And that brings the total budget for 2020 to just under $688,000. I'm just going to back up to the previous slide again to remind you of the different administrative assessments and the comparison. So if we stay on the $30 an acre foot, we are well below what the budget is. We have a significant shortfall between the budget and the expenditures for 2020. The $40 an acre foot does not quite meet the 2020 budget, but it does close the gap. And then at $45 an acre foot, it would allow for a little excess above the 2020 budget. So in summary, if we look at this compared to the available reserves, if we maintain the $30 an acre foot, considering the 2020 budget and the estimated 2020 production, we would have about $537,000 remaining in the reserves. Again, compared to the historic goal of maintaining about $1 million in reserves, this is significantly lower than that previously established goal. If we increase it to $40 an acre foot, we'd be just under $700,000 in reserves. The staff recommendation is to support the San Jacinto Water Master assessment rate increase from $30 an acre foot to $40 an acre foot for 2020. But we would also recommend that this continue to be revisited again in 2020 to assess the appropriate administrative assessment for 2021. And with that, I'll take any questions.
Linnea, was this discussed at the Technical Advisory Committee on Monday?
Yes, it was.
And what was the feedback?
The only other agency that provided feedback was Lake Hemet, and their comment was, well, we assumed 45, so 40 we're good with.
Right. So if you go back to slide 13, looking at these numbers, Lake Hemet actually pays the highest in total administrative assessments. Based on the $40, they have the biggest change of $74. So I did reach out to their general manager, given that they may be the most sensitive to this. And they have had a discussion among their board members. They're very comfortable with this. They were not comfortable ramping back up to the $50, but they think this is a good compromise, and they support our position that we need to keep revisiting this every year and make minor adjustments. So given that sensitivity, I wanted to make sure we reached out to them.
And if I could, I ask that this be put on the agenda today. I can believe when it comes to assessments on the Water Master, that should be a decision of this board, not myself just making a decision on behalf of the board. So very good presentation.
Yeah, very, very good. I was just curious. If we have another wet winter, does that put us further in the hole because we're not going to be using as much water?
Potentially.
Okay.
Yeah, and if MWD's cyclic storage program continues, we won't use as much. But, you know, also keep in mind, eventually, we will utilize
sure,
that water.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, by revisiting this annually, it'll give us the opportunity to adjust as some of these conditions exist. And
right.
We may be in a situation again in the future, if we're pumping, all of us are pumping a lot more, we may be able to get back down to $35 or $30 an acre foot. So.
Good.
This sounds appropriate to me, and if there wasn't an issue, they could come back.
Correct. I think the annual visitation is probably the best way to go on this. So
yeah,
okay,
I agree.
With that, I'll make the motion to approve the item.
I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously with Director Record absent.
Thank you,
Linnea. Agenda item 5, which is the information item. John, we're going to talk about the fiscal year 2018-2019 fourth quarter enterprise performance measures update.
Yes. Good morning, President Sullivan, members of the board. It's my privilege to provide the district's report card for quarter 4 of 18-19. We cover this in pretty fair detail at the committee, so I'll be able to breeze through this. I'll take any questions that the board may have, and if I can answer them, I've wisely invited Andy Regalado, who is our Andy prepares, compiles, and analyzes this data for our review every quarter. With that, we'll roll into it. Again, this is our 12 metrics, a balanced scorecard across all functions of the district. I can tell you that really the only impacts that we saw across the district were seasonal. As we saw low temperatures, lower sales, we see the impacts of those across a few of the metrics. And I'll just drill into a couple of those as we go through these. Excuse me. First one is water operating cost per acre foot delivered. This is our all-in cost for purchase and operations of our water enterprise. And as sales drop, the unit costs spike. The only anomaly there is May, and that appears to be related to billing with Metropolitan Water District, less purchased water through MET. But all in all, they're trending okay, and as you know, we close very well at the end of fiscal year. Next efficiency measure is wastewater treatment operating costs per million gallons treated. Our wastewater plants do a great job of managing their chemical and labor costs. They've kept those unit costs lower than the target. Our recycled enterprise spiked slightly above because of the weather. Sales were down, so unit cost creeped up. If you recall, we had substantial rain in February, still had storage management occurring in March, and I'll drill down into the detail on this metric. Finance prepares this bar graph for us, which details out the service charges for each month through their six-month period. And really what's telling here is the storage labor and labor and material and pumping costs that are attributed to the recycled water enterprise through the months of February and March. And when the rains quit and we no longer have a discharge, you see a substantial drop in those expenses. So this, again, this helps us determine root cause and drill down into what's moving the needle. Our final efficiency measure is self-generated power. The only anomaly here is the month of May. We had some communication issues on the fuel cells. The good news is the fuel cells continue to produce. They just were not reporting their loads back to the IOC. And also because of the weather, we had less production out of our solar arrays. But you can see we're real close to those targets there. Our first reliability measure is customer hours out of service. This is our water system. A little spike in April, nothing to note, but the good news is about 80% of our outages are planned outages. In particular, in April, we replaced two mainline valves that would not seal 100%, and so our crews went out there, scheduled it, worked with the city area, and replaced those valves. And in doing so, we have to take some of that community offline. Our second reliability measure is wastewater treatment reliability. This is the uptime of all of our wastewater plants, and those managers do an outstanding job of keeping those plants running, functioning, and up.
John, could you go to the detailed chart on this? Do you have that available?
I do.
This is something it's a bit of an eye chart, but it's something to really focus on. Because obviously, if we don't have plant uptime and we're not producing product water, we can't sell the recycled water. But one of the things to note, and I think it's in the green set of bars that are in the middle there, that's the Temecula Valley plant. Bear in mind, this plant was under major construction during this period, very disruptive. There's many months where they were between 99.5% and 100% production in those months. So that staff's really to be commended for working through those difficult construction periods and making sure that we're producing water for that part of the system. And it's something we continue to acknowledge with that staff what a good job they've done on there. And they're going to be happy when the construction's done, I know, because this tends to be a little bit of a problem. But we've really emphasized with the staff at the treatment plants, and Jeff and Matt have done an excellent job of working with the staff to emphasize how important it is to meet those high levels of production. But the Temecula plant in particular, I think, has just done an outstanding job given all the other constraints of operating during a major construction period.
I appreciate that, Paul. It's not to be minimized. It's a lot of challenges for the two tie-ins and all those kind of things that will happen, affect your operations as you're building the plant. But I would also look at San Jacinto.
Yeah.
The whole period there's only 2 months where they dropped to 99%. So that's just phenomenal. And it's a huge, all of these are a huge sea change from, say, 10 years ago. This has a direct correlation to our ability to keep the recycled water system pressurized. It's a huge impact on that metric. So it's a great.
Yeah. Thank you, John.
Yeah, this is just to make it add, this is an average of the monthly uptime, but I know that you provide reports to those plant managers on a weekly basis, is that right?
Yeah.
Creating some of the competition for uptime. The other thing that to note is, as Jeff was talking about the culture change, whenever we begin the new fiscal year, we're starting to compile 401, reach out to those owners of the metrics and ask them, is the goal still appropriate? Is the metric defined correctly or compiling the right data? But we need to revise that goal. And to Jeff's credit, he's bumped up that goal, I think, three times over the last 4 years. It's now at 98% of uptime. And happy to report that all 6 months are in the green here. So just again, as to note, Andy's reached out to those metric owners on every one of these. And we'll adjust them. And we'll adjust them at the beginning of the fiscal year. Our final reliability measure is wastewater spills of collection and RWRM systems. So we try to keep those spills, reportable spills, below 3. We had a few, but I'm happy to report that they're relatively low in volume. You'll see that one was 2,500 gallons at the plant, but it was contained on site and cleaned up and recovered. The other spills were related to a contractor who hit a marked sewer force main in Moreno Valley. The Morton lift station, and 500 gallons of that raw sewage was contained and recovered. Another reportable spill was 50 gallons at a dump station where a septic hauler released 50 gallons onto the
septic hauler had a bad name.
Yes, and our Sanderson lift station. So, again, a lot of things out of our control, but the good news is low volume, but all reportable spills, and that's how this metric is defined as reportable spills. Our first service metric is customer satisfaction score, or our last experience survey. We saw a dramatic improvement here over the last 2 months. A lot of this is attributed to not just upgrades to the interactive voice response system, but also to improve staffing for those peak periods and English versus Spanish speaking. So customer service should be commended for turning that number around. Our safety metric continues to hit the charts very well here. We established a goal of 4.25. The industry average today is 5.4, and you can see that we ended at 1.94. Just to note and talk about culture change, prior to proceeding into the Cal OSHA, our numbers were closer to 8. So you can see that it's a dramatic turnaround that the organization has achieved.
And on safety, we are going through our Cal OSHA CalSTAR recertification process this January.
Ooh.
So we do it every 3 years, I believe. And the annual the triennial recertification is in January.
We have three financial metrics. Again, Charles Turner reported the capital highlights and noted that we close very strong for the full entire fiscal year. This is how we track it per month. This is our G&A cost, percent of total operating costs. Based on the budget, it was established 11.6, and you can see we're right there at 11.8. Our net operating margin, this is dollars in minus dollars out. We trend along that blue line, which is our three-year historic average. And you can see we dipped a bit in March, but recovered very well in May and June. And I know, again, at the end of fiscal year, we came in exactly on target. Our final financial metric is investment performance compared to our three-year treasury yield. So we set the three-year treasury yield rolling average as our target of 1 and measure our district performance against that. This is one that we're evaluating the value and use of this metric on the go-forward. So you may see a replacement for this financial metric. Here is the line graph for that three-year treasury yield versus our monthly district yield. So in summary, we only have the two operating metrics that are a little off target. Again, they were impacted by the season. That's our water operating costs and our recycled water operating costs. But with that, I'll be happy to take any questions if we have.
Do you have any questions, John? Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, John. Okay.
You want to take a break?
Sure. We'll take a 10-minute break.
Yeah, well, I was going to...